Okay. All right. So I'd like to close out today with a simple reminder from the Buddha on what we have to, how we advance on the Dharmic path. If we think about the amount of time that we spend in meditation and the time we spend in what the Buddha called practice off the pillow, we can see that's about, 99 to 1. So it's good for us, and I hope you will indulge me when I do a retreat. It's more like an advance, and it's around how we spend 99% of our time, and then you can meditate at home on your own. You know, when the Buddha got the people together, I mean, they came together to hear a discourse. They didn't really come together to meditate. They came together to hear a teaching. And then after he taught them, then he'd tell each one, go to your hut, go to the root of a tree, you go on and handle your business, do your practice. And so I've sort of taken that example to try to use the time that we come together wisely to have this time of instruction from the Buddha. So I was talking about good fortune. We might also call that Buddhist resources. And this, this includes many things, not just like money or real estate or automobiles. You know, I haven't bought a car since I've become a nun. Every time my car is dying, somebody's offering me a car, and they give me a car that's 20 years old. And I mean, but that's fine with me, it runs. And so it's been so wonderful that I haven't had to even purchase a car to get from place to place in the last 20 years. But it's other things too, not just things that deal with finances. It's having a certain social standing in your community, a certain position where you can make a phone call, you can make an introduction, something like that that could be helpful. It could be beneficial to someone. Just having a good reputation we'd been closed for almost three years. I guess it's going on 3 years now. And we were working with the migrant workers, and they come and they stay part of the year, do the farming, and they leave. And so in our community, in our county, we are happy to see them come and happy to see them go. That means the only time that we look are welcoming and receiving is when they're here planting crops for our farmers or harvesting crops. All the other times we have the police are on the corners doing spot checks and pulling them over and all of that. But they're not gonna get anybody else who's gonna plant and harvest the tomatoes and pick the apples off the tree. So during that time, nobody bothers them. But as soon as that season is over, then there's a great effort to get them out of our community. And so during COVID, because they live in very tight quarters, in trailer parks and on farms that have a lot of bunk housing, they had a higher rate of incident for catching catching COVID. So they couldn't come, even though kids who live in our county could go to the Boys and Girls Club and things like that. They were not welcome to come. So what we did was we just opened up. We were closed for people coming for retreats and so forth. So we just opened up the monastery to make it a school for migrant worker kids. And we bought tents and we had we really loved them. It was a wonderful time. So we had games and we had classes and we had all of that. And then when it came time to go back to school and school was still not open, then What we did was we began to, and we were having a high uptick. Then we purchased internet so that they could have internet in their trailer so that they also could get their schooling, because schooling had gone back online. And it was wonderful to be able to do that, you know, but it took resources to be able to do that. That's what I'm saying to you. And so we wrote some grants, and we got a couple of grants. First, we tried to fundraise for them through the Buddhist communities, but we didn't do very well with that. So then we went to the secular people, and they gave us money. Now, that's all I'm saying. We have to look as Buddhist practitioners of how we actually use our resources. Santi was saying, well, I'm not thinking about a music contract right now, but, and I'm like, you could be thinking about it right now, because I want him to go out there and be successful, you know. I mean, I like his singing and all that, you know, with the choir, but if he could go out and get a recording contract, that would just be wonderful, because I know that his heart is with the Dhamma, and that he would use those funds to serve the Dhamma. So this is what we're talking about in All the Taints, what it takes to really get to the place that we drop all of the selfing and all of the things that we do, and how we spend our whole life selfing and not recognizing that the track that we lay is going to be the track that we ride upon, we ride on. And so as we're laying all of this ground for ourselves, there will be the recompense of those actions and those activities. You know, like, even when I do good, there is a price to pay for doing good. That means I'm creating karma when I do good, right? So if I'm creating good karma, then there is the reappearance so that I could experience the good for the good that I did. So whether I do bad or do good, you know, when there's still the main focus being the I, there is going to be reappearance in this world. That's it. But when there is no I, there is the doing, and yet there is no sense of I am doing, then there is a recompense that is not stuck to the wheel of samsara. Did anybody not understand what I just said? I just want to make sure that you get it, you know, because we think, oh, like we've done all these good things, you know, I've done all of these good things. My merit is immeasurable. And, you know, surely there's a seat for me in one of those heavens that the Buddha talked about, and he talked about a lot of them, you know, but it's the I that can't get in there. Yeah, it's the I that can't get in there. So we're like sunk, we're like lost if we don't find a way to uproot if we don't get off the seat of our throne. And so the Buddha talks about five ways, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 ways that we can do that. It's in Sutta number 2, and it's called All the Taints, not some of the taints, not a part of the taints, a fraction of the taints. It's ALL, All the Taints. And it says, listen, bhikkhus, and I'll teach you a discourse on the restraint of all the taints. I say that the destruction of the taints is for one who knows and sees, not for one who doesn't know and who does not see. When one attends unwisely, unarisen taints arise and arisen taints increase. And when one attends wisely, unarisen taints do not arise and arisen taints are abandoned. Now, there's some that should be abandoned by seeing, some that should be abandoned by restraining, some should be abandoned by using, some by enduring, some by avoiding, some by removing, and some by developing. Just about all you need to make it to the end of this path and reap the reward is Sutta number 2, All the Taints in the Majjhima Nikaya. And so then he goes into it and he asks them, well, what tank should be abandoned by seeing? And he says, those who have no regard for true men and unskilled and undisciplined in their dharma do not understand what things are fit for attention and what things are not fit for attention. And so central desires, sense desires, desires for, which includes the desire for being, the desire for being known, for being recognized, for being acknowledged, for being loved, for being cherished, for being like used, whatever, you just name it. And that's the thing about us developing a really kind of thick and tough skin, so that we don't always, you know, we don't have to use, I love you all, because I don't have to use euphemisms. I mean, I don't use them anyway, but you all accept me not using them. But I go some places and they're particularly offended because I just speak plainly, you know, so I'm not trying to appease. I'd rather like just tell it to you straight, do what you will with it. But I tell you, if you can take it and don't take it personally, just take it as a thing and see if that's in me, then you have a good chance of coming out of something. But if it has to be said in a certain way for you to be able to tolerate it, if it has to be, you know, done in a certain way for it to be acceptable to you and what you're used to, if you have to, then you're going to have a hard time dropping that skin. You're going to have a hard time stepping out of the self, because there's an expectation that you need it to be acceptable to you. You need to be pleased with it, and you can only receive it in a certain way. And it's one of the greatest hindrances we have towards stepping in to truth without preferences. And so that's why he says one of the strongest practices that we can have is ones that help train us to not be so easily offended, not so thin-skinned, not just plain talk, just being able to give plain talk. And the more you're able to tolerate plain talk, the more you'll see, well, like, this is not personal. He's not talking about me particularly. He's just talking about a condition. And if the shoe fits, I mean, what can I say? Maybe I just want to let you know that the shoe fits me. You know, but I can take care of it myself. I can take care of it in my own time, in my own way. So you don't have to telegraph and let everybody know that that's an issue that you have by your outward resistance to it. That's why he says, just listen. Don't do the yeah buts in the beginning. Just listen. And it becomes like a gentle rain. You know, when there's a harsh rain, it runs off. When I first moved to North Carolina, I tell you the truth, it must have rained like 300 out of the 365 days. And I said, we made a mistake coming here. I mean, it rains almost every day. And they're telling us that we're in a 10-year drought. I said, how can that be possible when it rains every day? But it was a hard rain. It was hard, it was fast. It ran off and that was it. So it never got to soak into the ground. It never got to soak in. And that's where listening comes in. You know, and not taking something personally. So we can hear it, it can sit out there, it doesn't have to touch us, unless we look and say, ooh, that's me. Mm. And then when we do it in this way, holding it at arm's length like that, we can work with it. We can work with it a lot better. So he goes on to tell them, these are the taints, these are the things that prevent you from dropping off the sense of self, allaying our ego needs so that we just become a part of it all. There's a song, I love that song, and it says that we're just a piece of it all. And it starts to feel or ring really, really true. And so he says that what we do is that we tend to things, put our focus on things, make an issue about things that are not fit for our attention. And the things that we should pay attention to, we don't pay attention to. So this is one thing that people pay attention to, or they question. This is how one attends unwisely. Was I in the past? Was I not in the past? What was I in the past? How was I in the past? Having been what? What did I become in the past? Shall I be in the future? Shall I not be? What shall I be in the future? How shall I be? Having been what? What shall I become in the future? Or am I? Or am I not? Now, what am I? How am I? When this, what, where has this being come from and where will it go? Okay, and so he's not saying don't recognize that everything appears, comes from something that, you know, which was indivisible, not invisible, but indivisible, undivided, undifferentiated, formulated into something. So when I came into this world, there is some place that this consciousness of came from. That's why you look at your child and say, whose child is that? You know, I can say that when they're 2 years old, have their own personality, their own way of being, their own way of doing. And you can watch, like, right in your family, like, what relationship do we have to each other? Because we're so different. I think, you know, I think the family is a joke, really. I just think, like, all the worst of our karma rolls into one family. We have to learn how to deal with it. And if we don't, it just keeps repeating. And then that's a joke. But we can see that there is some manifestation, and it's not like it didn't come from Uncle Charlie and didn't come from Mother Sue and Father Bob. But we don't think about that. We just know that's something, because we will drive ourselves crazy paying psychics and so forth to try to get these questions answered. He said, that's a waste of time. Don't bother, because we don't even really have the capacity to unravel that. I mean, that's the difference of being awakened and not awakened. You know, so he said, don't waste your time on that. Just be the best you can be right now. And that's where you start, being the best you can be right now. And when where you go from being the best you can be is just there doing without any thought than I am doing. That's a better way to use our time. Then he said that when we are fettered by views in this way, you know, that we lose time, we waste our life, you know, chasing what is unfit for attention and what we should not attend to. So he says, this is what you should attend to, that the truth of suffering, that it has a cause. That's all I need to know. I just need to know that it has a cause. Anything has a cause, has a cure. And there's a way leading to the cure. I'm looking for the way leading to the cure. I don't care why and how it came about. I acknowledge that it's here, and I'm looking for the way leading to the cure. So that's a better way to spend your time. Because what it does, it keeps you out of doubt around things that you can't do anything about in the past, you can't do anything about in the future. And so he said, don't waste your time with that. By restraining, things to be abandoned by restraining. And he says that that's like when we do the third precept about to avoid sexual misconduct, you know, that is a plural word there. So I translate it as sensual misconduct. That means that I watch, I'm careful about what I watch, careful about what, you know, I turn my attention to. You know, some people always looking to see something, you know, or pay careful attention to what I hear, listen to, itchy ears wanting to hear something, you know, always thinking something, scheming, thinking, speculating about something. You know, so keeping the senses gates drawn in, like retracted, so that we're just develop a mental faculty that becomes restrained. We're not so nosy. We don't have to know everything. We don't have to be in on everything. We take it up as a practice, but it says that when we do that, then vexation and fevers will not arise in us. Now he's talking about all the things, everything that keeps you from when you're standing at the doorway, the threshold of perfect wisdom being revealed to you. And these are the things that keep that from happening. So the first one produces doubt in us. We have doubt and we have skepticism and we just feel unsure. The second one is by not restraining the sense gates, we have vexation. And it says fever arises in the faculties. The third one is tends to be abandoned by using. And he says, you know, like when reflecting wisely, you use the robe only for protection from the cold or from the heat or protection from contact with gadflies, mosquitoes, the wind, the sun, and creeping things for the purpose of concealing the private parts. It says, and when one does this, then there's so much resource that's freed up. You know, they no longer have to feel impelled to buy expensive jewelry and spend so much money on fashion and clothing and even around, like I look at how popular the food shows have gotten now. We all have become food connoisseurs, you know, and it's like watching these things. I even watched a show one time, it was on, you know, houses, you know, the wealthiest houses. And I mean, these were $100 million houses, you know, and it takes you on a tour of all of these things. But what it does is it creates a craving and a dissatisfaction in you, like that was really nice, you know. And before we know it, you know, we have these same impulses and same desires. And I'm not saying that if you like a particular thing and you can afford that thing, then you should have it. I was a Cadillac girl myself, and so but I could afford it. It's if I wanted a Bentley, now maybe that's another thing, you know. So I didn't look at Bentleys because I couldn't afford a Bentley. But if I had and developed a liking for these Maybach or something like that, some car like that, I had some of the kids in our home, and that's all they looked at, these, you know, $1 million cars, and that's what they wanted, and it brought craving upon them, and craving led to stealing it, and, you know, and just not having a mind to work an honest day's work with their own hands, because that didn't bring enough money to get a Maybach. I don't know if that's the right name, because I don't know about those kind of cars, but it was something like that. Yeah, but all the kids knew about it. I didn't know about it. And yet when we would go out, I'd take them out to eat every once in a while. I took them to Arby's because, I mean, we had a lot of them. You know, we had like 18 kids. So I, you know, that was the best I could do, but to take them for a nice treat. But they'd be texting everybody, showing pictures. Ooh, look where we are. We're in a 5-star hotel. No, you're not, you know. We have to know what we need to do to restrain our sense and reflecting wisely. Then some of these things that we splurge on because of our craving for them, that we could use them for the propagation of the Dharma and to help people who are not as fortunate as we are. But it's only because we think that what we earn is ours. It's you know, that we get this more self-interested notion of how our resources should be used. And then he talked about taints to be abandoned by enduring. And principally, he spoke about enduring ill-spoken, unwelcome words. And that's for the mind, what agitates the mind. And then also developing a capacity for being able to handle bodily feelings that are painful. And he said that if we developed a capacity, you know, for this, then there would not be suffering when these things came to our life. We wouldn't even see them as suffering. And call me macaroni, what does that to do with me? You know, and so there is a certain self-containment that one has, that they're not so put out when they hear unwelcome words, and they can learn to tolerate more physically and in terms of their physical feelings. I know that since it wasn't you all, I can tell it. I had a retreat one time and a group came. And it's, when we come to retreat, and this was a jhana retreat that somebody was holding. And so they're in a jhana retreat and they're letting go of this and letting go of that, and they're so aloof and removed and so deep into emptiness or, moving towards nothingness and all of this. And I can't tell you how many notes I got on the desk, I like such and such kind of tea. Could you have that tomorrow for breakfast? This is not a hotel. This is a retreat center where we're practicing fewness of wishes. So the last straw, every day it was something with this group, and they came from the Silicon Valley. So, one day, the last straw was, there was a note that left and said, it's humid and some of the salt shakers are sticking, because somebody take care of that. I sure took care of it. I took all the salt shakers away from all the tables for the rest of the retreat, and I didn't even feel guilty about it. That was a training. And so, and then I told the teacher about it too. And I said, I think they get it from you because you've done nothing but ask for this, that, and the other since you got here. I said, I'd like to know what you're practicing and what you're teaching them, because I don't think it's what the Buddha taught. And, but she heard me, and afterwards, she tried to book for the next year. I told her no. I said, it's not worth, it's really not worth the aggravation to me. So I just, if I could have tolerated the aggravation, wanted to tolerate it and had to tolerate it, I could, but I just said, no, I just don't think that, there are plenty of places that you go that I think you'd be happier. And I'm sure whoever's serving you'd be happier too. And that was it. Then he talks about things to be abandoned by avoiding. He said, avoid some things like as if it were a chasm, a cliff, or a cesspit, or a sewer. And some of that is not just avoiding a thing, a situation, an event. It could be a person or a group of people, And some of them are friends that we have that we need to part with because they have unwholesome behaviors and attitudes that we're not strong enough to ward off. So if you can't run with the big dog, stay on the porch, And so he tells us not to be wandering to unsuitable resorts. I love the way he says that, And so sometimes, we have to change careers, or sometimes we can keep the same one and we can make an impact if we are not caught up in the net of craving and longing for the very things that are at those places that we go to. Then he talks about things to be abandoned by removing. And that is, he does not tolerate, use the word tolerate, does not tolerate any arisen evil or unwholesome states. He abandons them, removes them, does away with them, annihilates them, And so, but he spoke of not situations, right? He spoke of states, mental states. And so our work is done in that arena because our mind creates our reality. And then he talked about those taints that are removed by developing. And it starts with developing mindfulness, doesn't end with developing mindfulness. Mindfulness never stands alone from something. And so he talks about That mindfulness opens the door, that mindfulness enlightenment factor ripens and opens the door. It ripens in relinquishment. So relinquishment then is not something, it's not like a destination after we've done certain things. It rises the same way karma does, you know, in conjunction with the things that we're doing. And so the things that we do well and that are wholesome and beneficial ripen into a mind that can see through the illusion of the craving of this world and the suffering, and one arrives at their destination. So we can't buy our way in, we can't read our way in, we can't chant our way in. You know, actually we can't even meditate our way in. Meditation can be a support and an aid, but we have to cultivate until we reach or have our attainment. And this, it leads the way then to all the other factors of enlightenment. So that mindfulness enlightenment factor should begin to ripen through dispassion, through cessation, ripen into relinquishment. And then until one has that mind of renunciation, one is not really, really on the path, but we're just thinking about the path. Until one arrives at a place of renunciation, has a desire to get off the wheel of samsara and ask that question. You can't answer a question that has not been asked. You know, so one has to ask the question, how do I get off the wheel of samsara? They have to see the need for it. They have to see the trap of it. And it doesn't mean that we do nothing while we're here, but it just simply means that we recognize that there is a path leading to a freedom that we can follow and we can attain it, he said, in this very life. So in the beginning, many, many, many people were awakening, you know, and in the early days of the patriarchs, many, many, many people awakening. But you go to those same monasteries, there ain't nobody getting enlightened. You know, we stopped talking about attainment. We don't even use it. We just talk about practice. You know, like it's not possible. But if we keep in mind the end game, then we can see where we are on the map. You are here, you know, and we can look at where we are compared to what the end game is. Even if we're not ready for some of that, you know, when I grow up, I'll do that. But just know then that I'm a teenager, okay? Know then that I'm a toddler in relationship to the end game. So you keep your eye on the prize. And as we keep our eye on the prize, we will, by its own power, not by ours, but by its own power, its own attractiveness, its own energy, it will begin to draw us in that direction. And he said that when one has done these things, when they have abandoned what should be abandoned by seeing, by restraining, by using, by enduring, by avoiding, by removing, and by developing, then he is called one who dwells restrained with the restraint of all the taints, and he has severed craving, flung off the fetters, and with complete penetration of the conceit I am, he has made an end to suffering. So whatever you thought it might take, here's one Dharma gate out of the 88,000 Dharma gates, and one can absolutely attain, make an end to suffering, he said, just by inclining the mind to investigate oneself and lay down and abandon according to these methods of uprooting the taints. Regardless of what anybody says, how anybody else made it over, who anybody, who we think anybody is, like whether we think they are an Arhat or Buddha in this life or Bodhisattva or whatever. Whatever method they use, it may not be the method by which I understand. He said, but here's one, and this one may be for you. If not, there's a gajillion other methods in here. And we can try the one that works for us. He said at one time, try this for 3 days. If it doesn't work, come back and get another meditation object. That one's not working for you. You know, and so we don't have to go decades, but we do have to have the correct instructions, and we do have to have the desire for attainment, knowing that attainment, and believing, having the faith that attainment is possible here and now. I believe it. Sometimes some things that seem too simple, you know, it is too simple. But other times it's as simple as that. And when we've tried the intellectual way and that's not working for us, maybe there is another way that will work. So tomorrow we're going to be talking about the Bodhisattva path and how we start to live in our life for the sake of all beings. But you know, when I'm doing that, that includes me, so I'm not left out. You know, I'm still included in my aspiration. My personal aspiration is still included when I have an aspiration for all beings. And it's just another way of stepping out of the center of our world, because that's what causes all of our suffering and dissatisfaction when things aren't the way that we want them to be. I think that we are gonna close for tonight. I will see you in the morning at 9 to 11. And I thank you so much for staying with me all day. It's been great to see all of you. Of all of the centers that I miss going to, it's Seattle for sure. I just love you all so much. And I don't travel as much anymore, but I did tell Tim I'll definitely travel here to be with you all. You're my tribe. I thank you, and I offer you blessings for a peaceful night. I'll see you in the morning.